Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of our discussion about hair. Hair loss, hair restoration. We're talking to one of America's experts on the subject. He's Spencer Cobran. He is the host of The Bald Truth, which is an internet radio program on the subject of hair. And he's got a great website at thebaldtruth.com. You're also, in the previous podcast, we talked about some of the reasons for hair loss, and we began talking about surgical options for dealing with hair loss. He also mentioned a resource for people who want to check out the plausibility of various types of hair loss schemes, but also how to rate surgeons. Could you give us that website, that resource?
Yeah, well, two resources would be, the first one would be the American Hair Loss Association, which is AmericanHairLoss.org. And they can get information on, you know, anything and everything hair loss, including products and services and physicians. And if you want to check out just, you know, hair transplantation itself and hair transplant physicians, just go to the International Alliance of Hair Restoration Surgeons, which is IAHRS.org. And these are all doctors and their staffs who are vetted, and they have a tremendous amount of experience. So at least that's a good first step when people are trying to do their due diligence and researching their options.
So you were beginning to talk last in part one about robotic hair surgery. Does that mean no doctor, just a robot comes into the room, introduces himself in a like electronic voice, and then begins slicing and dicing your scalp?
Well, that would be pretty cool, but they're not quite there.
We're not there yet. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, I was talking about follicular unit extraction and the idea of being able to extract follicular units directly from the back of the donor area without using a scalpel. And the way it was originally performed, it was performed by hand using very small punches. The thing about this procedure, compared to the older procedures where you take out a strip and look it under a microscope and dissect the follicles in 3D, is that it's kind of like a blind procedure. So a physician really, it's a tremendous learning curve, and a physician really has to understand the anatomy of the hair follicle, and each patient is different, and it makes it very difficult to get the grafts out intact to have really viable grafts for transplantation.
And it's subject to human error and the fatigue factor. And, you know, I'd hate one of those jobs. It's like assembling, electronic components in a, an Apple iPhone factory or something all day long. Very hard.
Absolutely. What's great, there's a relatively new system. And actually, it was first on the market in 2011. Now, in 2011, I personally didn't believe that it was ready for prime time, but I was very intrigued by it, and I've kind of been following their progress over the years. And now I'm finally able to recommend the system. It's called the ARTAS Robotic Hair Transplant System. It's ARTAS. And basically, it's a computerized system that uses this advanced digital imaging and a robotic arm. And it's able to precisely kind of target individual follicular units in the back of the scalp and find those units and punch out those units without transection. And it can do it in a very rapid way, in a very, expeditious way. So you're right, it completely eliminates human error and the whole fatigue factor. And it really makes that part of the procedure that much more precise. Now, with that said, there are a handful of guys who are in the International Alliance of Hair Restoration Surgeons who really learned how to do FUE correctly. And they're doing great work by hand or using handheld motorized devices. But as the industry grows, more and more guys or physicians are getting into cosmetic surgery, of course, because of what's happening in healthcare. And also, as they get into hair restoration, they want to kind of perform the latest and greatest techniques. And what I think this robot allows especially novices to do is really kind of eliminate a lot of that learning curve and provide a tremendous service to consumers and to patients who are considering surgical hair restoration. So I think that the future of surgical hair restoration is robotics, and I think the ARTAS is definitely, they're doing a great job. So it's pretty cool. It's very cool stuff.
So let's momentarily get away from the subject of surgery and talk about some other methods of hair preservation or restoration. And one of them that is, why don't we cover first, you know, some of these, you know, potions, topical potions, things that people apply to the hair. I mean, there's minoxidil, which is actually considered, you know, medically realistic because it's based on an antihypertension drug, which had the unfortunate side effect of making its users hairy. And topically, it does work to some extent. How good is minoxidil for restoring hair?
Minoxidil is actually better than a lot of people think, you know, as far as at least maintaining your hair. You know, the key to medical treatment is early intervention. It really is the key. So you want to start treatment as soon as possible. Now, the issue
it's better to keep your hair than to replace your hair, right?
So exactly. It's a lot more difficult. You know, hair loss is caused by something called the miniaturization process of the hair follicle. And you don't just lose your hair, but basically your hair follicle shrinks. It's caused by DHT. So as the hair follicle shrinks, the hair lifespan gets shorter and shorter until eventually you're just growing very, you know, non-cosmetically significant vellus hair. So there's always some hair there, but, you know,
in other words, fuzz. Fuzz.
You catch it.
Yeah, in other words, what we'd say non-cosmetic vellus hair. You're talking about fuzz.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Peach fuzz. And you see, if you look closely at it, even the most bald, you know, the most significantly balding guy, you're going to see there's like kind of a layer of fuzz in most guys on the top of their scalp. So minoxidil does help to keep hair in an anagen phase, a growth phase, longer. So there is obviously clinical data, and it's FDA approved, that proves this fact. The thing is, and again, I want to preface this by letting everyone know I'm not a doctor. I know you've already told them that. But, you know, the thing is that in my view, and in the view of a lot of experts in the field, it really is more of a Band-Aid. So it kind of has a temporary effect. It may last. It may work for a person for, you know, 3 years, 5 years, but eventually the genetics just are too strong, and the hormones kind of overcome keeping your hair in that growth phase using this topical.
So it's a delaying action.
It's basically delaying it. So for men, you know, the most commonly prescribed drug that really works the best is finasteride, which is, you know, either Proscar or Propecia. Now, obviously, finasteride is now generic, so you can get in generic form, 1 milligram finasteride. And basically what that does is it stops the conversion of testosterone into the byproduct of testosterone, which is DHT, which is what shrinks the hair follicle. It blocks an enzyme called 5-alpha reductase type 2. Very effective. It works in about 86% of the guys that use it as far as slowing down or stopping the progression of hair loss. And a certain percentage of guys will regrow some hair. But there is a possibility of adverse side effects, and the side effects could be
That has been brought up, actually, especially, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, they said fine, it's perfectly harmless, and then years later it emerged that there were some significant problems associated with taking those meds. So what are those?
Absolutely. Well, initially during clinical trials, which were conducted by the drug company, Merck, the manufacturer of the drug, it showed that about 2% of the guys who used the drug in the double-blind placebo study suffered from certain sexual side effects, either lowered libido, lowered amount of semen, or, you know, lower ejaculant, or impotence. It seemed, at least during that trial, about 1.5% of the placebo group suffered the same side effects. So it seemed at the time that those side effects were negligible.
Right.
So it was prescribed as an extremely safe drug. Years later, and, you know, I don't know if some of this, and I'm not saying that, you know, a lot of these guys who are coming out aren't truly suffering with these adverse side effects, but I don't know if there was some mass hysteria, at least online hysteria.
Well, there could be a huge placebo effect around that, yeah.
Absolutely. There seems to be some men who suffer with what they consider to be either permanent loss of libido or permanent impotence, even after getting off the medication.
Mm-hmm. Long-term, in other words, not just temporary.
Right, and there's a new, you know, I don't know what you would call it, but there is a theory called post-finasteride syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some doctors that are claiming that, I don't know if these are fringe guys who are trying to take advantage of the situation or if this is the real deal, and maybe you can, you know, you could let me know, but there does seem to be a small subset of guys who have these long-term adverse side effects. Now, I've been on the drug for...
By the way, also some degree of depression because, you know, the brain is sensitive to testosterone, and DHT is one of the testosterones that's said to be the, quote, bad testosterone. But maybe in terms of brain function for some men, it's important to stabilize mood.
And I agree. And there's guys who are complaining of what they call online brain fog and, you know, different issues with memory.
Now, you say you've been on it.
For a very long time.
Yep.
I'm sorry?
You say you've been on it.
Yeah, I've been on it for a long time, but I've also been in the industry for a very long time. My book was published in 1998. I was on the radio for 11 years before I decided to do the online broadcast. And it hasn't been until recently, the last 5 or 6 years, that I have received these concerns or complaints. And it all kind of started online. So, you know, I don't know. You know, I deal with a lot of doctors, you know, who have prescribed finasteride to thousands of patients, and I've polled these doctors. And there was only one doctor I was able to find that said that one of his patients complained of long-term adverse side effects, which eventually subsided. So, you know, I don't know, but I think it's important. I put it out there for people who call the program. My experience has been just only positive. I've been able to maintain most of my hair. I'm 49 years old. Now, I started to lose my hair at 21. If you were to see me online, tell people that I'm very honest about it. I wear a ton of hairspray. I wear a little makeup on the back of my scalp to kind of cover the shine, especially when I'm in lights. But for the most part, I shaved my hair, and it was due to this drug.
Right. So that's great. Is there a difference physiologically between men's hair loss and women's hair loss? Could some of these same techniques be applicable to women, for example, minoxidil or, I know it's really dangerous for a woman who has the potential to get pregnant to use these medications like finasteride or Avodart.
Right.
But say a postmenopausal woman where there's no question of pregnancy, could they use those medications to slow their hair loss? Or is this androgenic alopecia just more specifically a male problem?
Well, it's the same problem for men and women, except women experience it in a different way. Women experience a diffuse type of hair loss. So in most cases, that eliminates some of their options. One option it eliminates for most women is surgical hair restoration,
right,
because there's no stable donor area. Sadly, you know, the industry doesn't really tell that to women, so there are a lot of walking wounded out there. A lot of women who end up getting surgical hair restoration, hair transplantation, who end up with just a linear scar on the back of their head, and maybe they grow some hair for a couple of years, and then it all falls out, and they're left with, $20,000 lighter in their bank account, and they still have to wear a wig.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important, especially for, you know, a lot of older women, you know, women, you know, in their 30s and, you know, not 40s and 50s, they're starting to kind of move in the hair transplantation direction. I like to warn them that they have to be a very specific candidate to have hair transplantation. We can talk about that later if you want. But
well, maybe if they have like patches of hair, like alopecia areata or something like that, perhaps.
Yeah, well, the thing about alopecia areata is really it's thought to be an autoimmune disease. So to transplant hair when you're dealing with an autoimmune disease, you don't know if that hair is going to be susceptible to that disease.
It might be damaged or it might fall out anyway. Okay.
Exactly. So they really don't transplant for alopecia areata, but there are there's a subset of women who do kind of they demonstrate a male type of a pattern where they do have a stable donor area, and those women could be transplanted. And also women who have had prior facelifts who kind of lose their sideburns, those are good candidates for hair transplantation as well. As far as the drugs are concerned, minoxidil is still the only FDA-approved drug for women, and they disapproved a 5% solution for women. It does work, but again, it's the same limitations that you're dealing with as a man. Sometimes it's only temporary. There is a relatively newer procedure that's getting a lot of talk, and there's a lot of hype for cosmetic surgery in general, but it's called platelet-rich plasma therapy.
For arthritis, for sports injuries, you know, that kind of knee problems.
Exactly. There's some pretty significant data showing that when platelet-rich plasma therapy is done correctly and using, the right type of, cellular matrix done by the right, center, the right physician, there's a handful of guys out there who are getting really good results. And now it's really being promoted for hair loss. The problem is all PRP is not created equal. So you really have to go to somebody who truly understands how to utilize this treatment for hair loss. But I've seen some pretty significant results. So I usually tell women, if they have the money, because it's between $1,000 and $3,000 per treatment, and you need to do it at least twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the money and you have the time and you're willing to take that, you know, to risk possibly losing your money, it's probably the safest treatment to start.
Interesting.
Because you're utilizing your own blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no drugs involved. Basically, they just draw your blood, they put in a centrifuge, they separate the growth factors, and they re-inject it into the person's scalp.
Hmm.
And it seems to keep the hair in an anagen phase longer, and it kind of reverses the miniaturization process. And it seems to be very effective for women.
Interesting. And you have resources on your website at thebaldtruth.com?
Absolutely. But, you know, there's, and this is not to plug a specific doctor, but there's a physician by the name of Joe Greco. He's actually not a physician. He's a PhD. He's a researcher. And his brother is a physician. And if you go to Greco Hair Restoration, I think that's what it is, GrecoHairRestoration.com, you can read all about PRP and CRP. I make, you know, there's no commissions here. I'm not working with Joe Greco at all.
I get it.
But he is really the pioneer. So for women out there that are really, you know, they're really desperate and they really want to try to do something, especially the women who are just starting the process, I believe that this has tremendous benefit.
What are the biggest scams out there in terms of hair loss interventions?
Well, one scam is, you know, I just said that PRP works. One scam is the doctors that are offering PRP that don't know what they're doing. And they're not offering it with the right, growth factor stimulus, like, you know, using thrombin. Or they're not utilizing correctly. They're just drawing someone's blood, putting it into a centrifuge.
Spinning it down and shooting it back in,
Yeah, and charging $1,500 to $3,000, that's a big scam. So that's mm-hmm. why I think it's important that women know and guys that all PRP is not created equal, and I wanted you to check out Dr. Greco's website.
What about the creams, potions, formulas?
Almost everything that's sold out there is complete nonsense. You go online, you look up hair loss treatments, you're going to find everything under the sun that's complete nonsense. And, you know, it's important that people understand that. Things have not changed that much. Now, with that said, there are some products out there that are utilizing generic minoxidil in their formulation. So they can work, but they're basically packaging it with shampoos and charging you up to 5 to 10 times the cost
mm-hmm.
of generic minoxidil that you can buy over the counter at your drugstore.
So however they try to tart it up or rev it up, it's just basically it's the minoxidil that's the business end of that of those formulas.
Absolutely. And it's just, you know, they have, you know, you see these really well done 2-minute, you know, mini infomercials online for women dealing with hair loss. And it's more geared towards women. And, you know, they're beautiful packaging, but they're charging a tremendous amount of money for something that you can get over the counter.
Like placenta extract and God knows what, you know.
Exactly. And there's also a big thing, and if you go online, that's where everyone does their research now, stem cell therapy.
Yes. Yeah, how about that? Because, I mean, that's promising. Eventually, we'll be able to replace organs, so why not here?
Absolutely. But right now, anyone who's offering stem cell therapy to treat hair loss, it would be my advice to just kind of walk away from that.
Run the other direction.
Yeah, there's no clinical data that has really shown that any of these, especially these individual practitioners, they have not been able to prove that that it works. We get a lot of complaints from all over the country through the American Hair Loss Association from men and women who have been duped by these, you know, by these doctors. And, you know, sometimes they're like well-known cosmetic surgeons that are offering this in their practice. So it's frightening out there because some of these doctors actually have pretty good credentials, and they're offering people, you know, excuse my French, but crap.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the future potentially of hair replacement is that they will develop clonal lineages of pluripotential hair follicle generating cells, and then they can just implant them into the scalp, and then you'll get seeding a lawn.
Absolutely. There are two companies right now that are getting closer to that process. One is called Replicell. And basically, they're offering an autologous cell therapy, or they're testing it, which utilizes dermal sheath cup cells. And they are isolating these cells, multiplying them, and then reinjecting them into the scalp. And they're going into phase 2 trials right now, and it's extremely promising. They are getting hair growth, and the hair also seems to be growing in the right natural direction for some reason. So that's pretty exciting. And
in other words, you don't look like a hedgehog afterwards.
Exactly. You know, that's another thing.
Because that's important. Yes, the hair is like a circular pattern, and it's, I mean, you want to be able to comb it.
Your hairline, basically, it grows downwards, and then there's a swirl on the top, and the hairs on the side kind of grow sideways.
So you want the right orientation.
Absolutely. And that's important. But it's kind of fascinating that the hair is growing in the right orientation naturally. So I don't know, something to be said about that.
It's one of those things that they probably solved in mice, but they've cured baldness in mice countless times, but they haven't quite made it to the human stage.
Absolutely, but what's great about these two companies is that they actually are closer, as far as they are currently doing tests in humans, and it seems to be working to some degree. There's another company called Histogen. They have something called hair stimulating complex, which is kind of a similar situation, and they're isolating proteins. I think it's KFG and VEGF, and they're able to isolate these proteins and then re-inject them into the scalp, and hair. There seems to be significant hair growth. So both these companies are kind of like racing to get to the point where they're able to offer this, hopefully offer this to the public. But if I'm being honest, I can't see anything really coming to market for at least 7 years, maybe 10 years.
So stay tuned. Even though
they're in phase two testing, at least Replicell is. But there are some. They may be able to offer it offshore. I know that in Japan, some of the regulations have been a little bit more lax now, as far as being as far as regulation. So maybe. Happening faster in Japan, but it's exciting stuff. Eventually, they will get this, and hair loss will be a thing of the past.
A couple of things I wanted to ask you is, something that's touted as a natural substitute for drugs like Avodart or Proscar is sol palmetto. Many of the quote natural hair formulas contain sol palmetto, which is a bit of a DHT blocker. Is there any plausibility to that?
Well, and I'm glad you asked me that. When I wrote my first book, which was published in 1998, I wrote a chapter on herbal supplementation and, hair regrowth and hair, basically for hair loss. And at the time, based on some data and some studies that were in JAMA and, in other publications, it was theorized that herbal supplements like sol palmetto, Pygium africanium, and stinging nettle that all have DHT lowering properties would help with hair loss. I believe that they helped me at the time, but I was also taking, because there's really no data on this, I was also taking Proscar at the time. So when I wrote that chapter, I was very excited about it. And I think that kind of prompted a lot of companies, vitamin manufacturers and herbal manufacturers, to start putting together these hair formulas. About 5 years after, I decided to kind of do a 180 and just let my listeners know that there really is no clinical data. And, just because it comes from nature.
It's scientifically plausible, yes, maybe, but the where the rubber meets the road is in clinical trials, double-blind placebo-controlled trials. It's not really been shown to reverse hair loss, right?
That's right. It has been shown to lower DHT, but it hasn't been shown to reverse hair loss. So
okay.
It seems to work well for some prostate, for some patients with benign prostate hyperplasia or enlarged prostates, but it doesn't seem to do, to really work well for people with hair loss. And also, I think it's important to know that, people think that these herbal supplements are side effect free, but I mean, just because it's natural doesn't mean that it doesn't affect your body. And, it comes from nature's pharmacy, and these supplements have been shown to cause the same adverse side effects as finasteride, meaning some guys who take it have a lowered libido, they have
gynecomastia, which is swollen breasts and so on,
Exactly. So, I mean, and the thing is, it's not really regulated, so you don't know how much you're putting in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people to kind of think twice before they try to treat their hair loss with herbs.
Okay. And then the one other that I wanted to ask you about, and this is these devices are popular. I think they're, if not FDA approved, not FDA disapproved, is these low-level laser devices for stimulating the scalp. Anything to that?
Well, actually,
even some consumer models.
They're FDA cleared, which is a lot different than being FDA approved. And, you know, 510 clearance, and people should look that up online, is basically it's being cleared for safety. It's being compared to an earlier device that was cleared by the FDA. So some of these devices are kind of easy to clear now. And it doesn't necessarily have to show efficacy to be FDA cleared. It just means that you're not going to harm yourself. Now, there's one device that was showed to be efficacious to some degree, and that was the Hermax laser comb. Now, I may be wrong about that. I think that's the only one that actually showed that it was effective. But anecdotally, it doesn't seem to be doing much. There are laser, like these home laser caps and laser helmets. Now, the American Hair Loss Association doesn't currently endorse any of these or recommend low-level laser light therapy for hair loss. But anecdotally, I will tell you that at least in the last few years, since these newer devices have come out, people have called the program, people have contacted us through email, and they truly believe they're being helped. And I've seen some pretty good before and after pictures. So, okay. You know, I have an open mind. I will not endorse any of the products, and there are companies that have actually, you know, they've come to me and they've offered, you know, a significant amount of money for me to endorse the products. Yeah. I've turned them down. But I will tell people, you know what, if you have the money and you're not, you know, you're not concerned about losing $1,000 and you want to give it a shot, if everything else fails, like, you know, if you try to take medication, doesn't work, then it's not going to do you any harm, and it may help you.
Well, great. All right, well, we've covered a lot of ground on today's two broadcasts, part one and part two of today's podcast on the subject of hair loss and hair restoration. For more information, today's Intelligent Medicine call to action is to go to thebaldtruth.com. It's thebaldtruth.com, correct?
That's correct.
And you can also listen to some of the great podcasts. You produce them on a weekly basis?
Yeah, we produce them almost every week, and they're live. So it's a live broadcast. We're also on iTunes Radio and every basically live streaming site known to man, and Stitcher Radio. We do video and audio broadcast. And if people want to call in, we are live on Tuesday nights, and they can watch the show, see me in the studio on theballtruth.com.
And see that luxuriant full head of hair that you have.
Well, which, thanks. It's a little bit of a you know, a little dummied up, like I said, but I do my best.
Well, that's good news because, you know, I have to say, we began talking, you know, maybe 15, maybe as long as 20 years ago. You were, you know, very concerned about the potential that, you know, you'd have basically an egg-shaped cranium, you know,
that's right.
Devoid of hair. And here you are 15 years later. So whatever you're doing, and this is short of radical surgery, you seem to have headed things off of the past. So. You know, and we respect your honesty, your integrity, and you can't be bought, and you'll call it what it is. And I think that's important as a consumer advocate in this field, which is rife with scams.
Well, I appreciate that.
So thanks for being a watchdog on this front. So we'll check in with you in a little while. And please, you know, as soon as there's something worthy of a dispatch to our Intelligent Medicine listeners, let me know so we can get the word out.
Okay, I'll let you know, for
sure. Thank you very much for joining us, Spencer Cobren. That's K-O-B-R-E-N. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.